This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, my name's Daryl Ong and you're locked in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. This week on the program, we're privileged to have two legends in basketball. Herman J.R. Reed Jr., who made his name with the Milwaukee Bucks, the New York Knicks, the LA Lakers, among others. Also, we have Cappy Mary Pondexter, a two-time WNBA champion and an Olympic gold medalist. In June, the duo were in Malaysia as part of the Sports Diplomacy Program from the US Embassy, which saw them visiting KL, Kuching, KK, working closely with Junior NBA Asia, doing a series of basketball clinics, coaching academy workshops, and speaking opportunities. To kick off the conversation, we turn to Cappy Pondexter, who earlier in the year retired after a 13-year career. We ask about the legacy she would like to leave behind.
You know, I tell people often, you know, when you talk about my legacy, I think the most important thing was just me being a winner. You know, I always wanted to win every single game that I played. I competed at the highest level. Every single night that I was on the floor, I gave it everything that I had. And, you know, for me, that's what it was always about. It was about representing myself at the highest level, being a winner and a champion.
And a role model of sorts too, right, for younger players?
Absolutely. That comes with playing a game of basketball. You know, you start looking up to somebody and then 10, 15 years later, you have other players looking up to you. And, you know, it's the game of basketball. That's what it's all about.
13 years is no joke. It's seriously a long, long time. Did it pass by in a flash for you, or is it?
It really did. It passed by so quickly. I remember being drafted in 2006 and then all of a sudden, 2 months ago, I'm now announcing my retirement. Like, what? And I wake up every day and it still feels not real. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do today? All right, what's next for me? But I'm enjoying every moment that I have to experience life. Because when you're playing a game of basketball, you're so focused just on being the best player that you can be that you really don't enjoy real life. You forget about it and you're just focused on that one thing. So now I get to interact with people so much more. I get to go to different places and it's like a kid. I feel like a kid all over again. It's really cool.
Looking at basketball from the outside perspective, right?
Yes.
JR, your dad was a football player in the 60s. In fact, you actually played football in your earlier days. You were offered contract to join a college team.
Yes. I was recruited when I was 13 or 14 for football before basketball. And I came from a football household. But as I got taller, my dad realized, you know, hey, maybe you should go with the basketball route. So that's what we did. And sports in general have always just been so positive for me, you know, and I think it's an opportunity for us now. We can go abroad and had opportunities to play around the world. And athletics just gave us that opportunity. And now we're older and we're done playing, but we can still put our fingerprints on the game by coming and working with the youth and trying to aspire them to become better players and working with coaches. So this program that we've been doing with the U.S. Embassy here has been terrific in our sports envoy. And we've had a chance to go to the orphanage yesterday and this morning with the junior NBA. We worked with about 100, 150 coaches, just trying to get them acclimated and the right terminology and so they can go out and teach young players, you know, this beautiful game that we love so much.
And all these kind of things stick, you know, it's a long process. You can't just change things overnight. So yeah, as part of the U.S. Sports Diplomacy Program, you guys will be in KL, you guys are heading to Kuching and KK as well. What's your ultimate goal for this tour?
Just to give back and show them that it's possible. You know, I've also learned something yesterday that Malaysia's haven't won a gold medal.
Yeah, in the Olympics, yeah.
To be able to, you know, allow them to experience what we've experienced and let them know that it's possible, I think it's a great thing. And I'm super excited to give everything that I've learned from the game of basketball to them right now.
Mm. And how was the response like to, you know, basketball is not really a homegrown or a top sport in Malaysia. You have what, football, you have your badmintons. In Malaysia, basketball is still seen as, you know, a court game. People play as a hobby, not so much as, you know, established career like in the NBA. What are your observations so far in Malaysia?
Well, I love it. We just left the arena where you've just started a basketball league, mm-hmm. and they just finished the first season, but sort of making strides in that. So, you know, this is a sport that they're trying to adopt. And from my time yesterday at the orphanage, mm-hmm. which was majority of young girls playing, and Kathy can attest to it, they picked it up like that. We were playing games and they were excited about it. And I'm like, man, this their enthusiasm and passion for this game they just picked up a few minutes ago mm-hmm. is amazing. So I think if the rest of the country has that type of feel for the game, I think basketball could do very well here. Mm.
And definitely helps that people like you guys are coming to cultivate that culture. JR, you're selected by the Charlotte Hornets in 89.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about the experience being a young NBA in the first season. What kind of lessons do you take away from that freshman year?
Oh, well, my rookie year, I left the University of North Carolina. I played in college at the same university that Michael Jordan went to, but after him, a few years, we played for our legendary coach, Dean Smith. And I stayed in school 3 years, and Coach Smith said it'd be a good time for me to leave to go to the NBA. So I declared and went, and I was the fifth pick in the first round in the lottery. And I went to the Hornets, and we weren't a very good team. Let's just say that. I think my rookie year, we were 19-63. But I learned some lessons. We had an older coach, Dick Harder. He's the one that told me, JR, we're terrible. He says, but you've got to set your tone on what type of player you're going to be in this league. You do it by not just coming out and doing whatever you want. Come in and do the work. Come in early. Don't be the first guy to leave the gym. Play with a passion on the court, and that will follow you on the court throughout your career. And so I took that from him. Even though we weren't doing very well, I tried to still improve my game and help the team win as much as I can as a rookie and trying to learn.
I guess sometimes you learn the best lessons if you join a not-so-good team.
That's right. That's exactly right. You're exactly right.
Both of you came up through the university and the high school system, that whole grassroots movement for the NBA. Do you think the sport today put too much emphasis and expectations on younger players?
I don't think so. I think the kids that are playing basketball now, it's a choice that they decide to make early in their you know, youth. You know, I think 10 years now is like when you really take basketball serious, knowing that you could possibly get a contract or you can be an Olympian. So we know from that age that, okay, we're dedicated to being the best athlete that we can possibly be. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously you go through the rankings, you go through high school rankings, you go to college rankings, and then possibly get drafted. So you take it very serious from a young age.
JR, you were considered back in the day to be one of the top high school players. Tell us a bit about the importance of, you know, this scene as a scouting ground for gems, and also how important is the grassroots structure? Because you really have a system set up. You know.
Right. And America's a little different. We've been playing this for 100 years or so. And yes, to come here and get it done and to come and help a country try to start her basketball program is special. And that's why I'm so privileged and honored to come over on this sports envoy with the U.S. Embassy and, you know, just try to reach people and let them know it doesn't matter that we don't speak the same language. Mm. You know, it doesn't matter that we may not even be the same religion. But, you know, what matters is that we can play this game together and understand each other without language, you know, and that's the beautiful sport, you know, that basketball is. And now my parents are both school teachers, and teaching and giving back and working with others, that's what we've done. You know, that's what I've loved to do my whole life. I ran a camp, basketball camp, since I was 16 years old in high school. So we've always worked with youth. So this is fun for me. And for getting the opportunity to come over here and just meet all these beautiful people in this terrific country has been tremendous. Mm.
Chappie, in 2006, kind of a career-defining year for you, made an instant impact for the Phoenix Mercury, became just the third rookie in the league history to score at least 600 points. What are your thoughts on the current crop of WNBA players?
Wow, they're very talented.
Yeah.
I think they've learned so much from the other pioneers who kind of graced the game in the WNBA and implemented that into their game. So they're more athletic. They're playing above the rim. I mean, they're getting shoe deals. They're getting sponsorship deals. I mean, they're a lucky bunch, honestly. And
It was different back in the day.
Yeah, totally different. Wasn't a lot of opportunity, especially for women basketball players. So to see it, to see the game grow, it has been great. And I'm, you know, like Jared mentioned, being here, just giving the opportunity to the young ladies here, I think it'll help the game globally. Mm. And we need that in the WNBA. Mm. I think the NBA has done a great job of implementing the global game, and now it's our turn as women basketball players to do the same. So it's kind of cool.
As a WNBA legend, you kind of spoke up on a lot of issues surrounding elite equal pay. You even talk about things on respecting former players. What do you think the association / league can do to make the WNBA move in the right direction?
I've had conversations with Adam Silver, and we know we need to put more marketing dollars in the game. You know, I think the players are working really, really hard to improve their skill level, and so now it's the association turn to give it back to us in return. Mm. You know, we know that we're not making equal pay. You know, that's no-brainer. But how can we improve that? How can we get the fan base to want to come to WNBA games? So it's a lot of factors that are in there that we can improve, and I think the more we have these conversations, the more we're not afraid to talk about these things, the more we'll see improvement. Mm.
You've been playing in the league for 13 years. How different has the league changed since when you started?
Uniforms have changed.
Okay.
From being with Reebok to now Nike. So I think that's one of the cool things. But just overall, playing in cool arenas, probably like the biggest thing that I've seen since I've came into the league. Mm. Hopefully, one thing that I do want to see change, I would love to see more teams become part of the WNBA. I'm not saying that we could get to where the NBA is right now, but to be able to experience playing in other cities aside from the 14 that we're playing in now, I think that would be really cool for us.
Well, why do you think that this issue arises? Why aren't teams joining the WNBA?
Money. I mean, obviously, the revenue has to improve, and we know that. And the marketing, I think, will help us improve the revenue. And that way that the players can make more money, the league, the NBA won't lose money supporting the WNBA, and we could sustain on our own. And I think that's just all a part of a new company being started. We've only been around for 24 years. Mm-hmm. So if we can go another 25, I'm sure, you know, we'll see players making $5 million or more, you know.
JR, you're part of the coaching setup for the Monmouth University basketball team.
Yes.
Right now. How is it like, you know, transitioning from playing to coaching? You just said you like it. Your parents were teachers.
Right. And my parents were teachers. My father was a middle school coach, high school football and basketball coach. So, yeah, go ahead. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Do you miss playing?
Oh, do I miss it? You know, I had my run. I played a long time with a lot of great guys and great teams. So I understand that. And it's just a natural transition. And for me, I made my transition by going right out of when I finished basketball in the NBA, I started doing broadcasting. Mm. That was my degree in college. Mm. So I went right into that. I worked for the ACC Digital Network for about 5 years, 6 years for them. And then my buddy, my best friend from Carolina, my point guard, was the head coach at Monmouth.
King Rice.
And he kept asking me for a couple of years, hey, man, why don't you come join our staff? You know, I was waiting on the NBA coaching situation. I was waiting. Finally, he said, man, stop wasting your time with those guys. I need you here. Yeah. So I was like, I came up. And when your best friend asked you to join his staff, it's been fabulous. And it's like I just getting to work with young kids, 18-year-old men, helping them to develop. You know, chasing dreams, man, it's nothing any more fun than that.
In Malaysia, we have a problem of documentation. We tend to forget the legends in our game. So when you step into your first foray into coaching, were the younger players starstruck at all?
Oh, no. Well, some of them knew. No, but actually, because when I wasn't on the staff, I was coming up working out them in the summer anyway for 3 or 4 years. So I had already built a relationship with a lot of guys on that team. And we would follow each other on Twitter and ask me questions. A couple of them went to play in Europe and they asked me some questions on that. So, no, they weren't starstruck, but they do look to me for info, you know, and for guidance. You know, they want that extra. They're hungry for knowledge, so I can give them something that maybe a coach who didn't play in the NBA can't give them. So I try to use that to my advantage. And we've got a lot of good young men who like to work hard, and that makes my job really easy.
That's great. For every athlete, I guess, in the world winning like you said, the Olympic goal is every athlete's dream. JR, you came close. You got close. Bronze. Cappy, though, you won gold in Beijing. How was the experience like for both of you, you know, to represent the country at the highest level?
Speaking of, it is Olympic Day. We are celebrating, so it's pretty cool that we're talking about it now,
right.
To have that experience. You know, I started playing USA basketball at the age of 15, and then I worked my way up to being an Olympic gold medalist on the national team. So it's super cool to experience everything that I have with USA basketball, and it's probably one of my fondest memories.
Yeah.
So
I mean, the U.S. didn't even drop a single game at the whole tournament.
Oh, wow.
Was it a case of, you know, your team just blowing everyone away, or the competition just not keeping up?
We have an advantage. We started basketball.
Keep it real. Come on.
We started basketball. So, like, I mean, our skill level, you know, and the way we practice and prepare for games is top notch. And USA basketball has been top of the charts for a long period of time.
Mm.
And, you know, the way we approach every single game is like we don't lose. You know, that's our mindset when we're battling. So it's cool to represent USA on the front of our jerseys. Mm-hmm. And every player that has done that can say the same thing, that we take great pride in representing the red, white, and blue.
Mm. JR, how was your Olympic experience?
Oh, mine wasn't as sweet as Cappy's, but the experience overall was terrific.
Yeah.
For me, I played in the 1988 Olympics in Seoul, and that was the last Olympics that we had college athletes before they started the Dream Team, professionals could play. So that's when it was still kind of at its purest. You know, we were out there, a lot of us didn't have any money, still we were college students, and we didn't have the great travel like the Dream Team had, but it's an experience. And I was talking earlier to the coaches we work with at the Junior NBA. For me, setting goals for myself was important, and that was one of the goals that I had set for myself when I was very young. I wanted to make the Olympic team.
Right.
I remember sitting on the couch in 1976 with my dad watching Bruce Jenner and watching him run, and like, man, I'm like, Dad, I'm gonna go to Olympics. He's like, well, what do you want to do? I said, I might box in the first one, then I might run track in the second one. And he goes, well, you better get to work. So for me, setting goals, just sitting and watching people achieve dreams and working hard, and that's what I did. And you can get anything you want if you go out here and grind and do it.
That was American basketball legends Herman J.R. Reed Jr. and Cappy Pondexter, both who paid a visit to Malaysia as part of the Sports Diplomacy Program from the USMC. Coming up, we talk about the Olympics, we talk about the basketball scene here in Malaysia, their post-retirement plans, and many more. You stick around, my name is Daryl Ong, and this is Bar None on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you tune in to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. On the program this week, we have two American basketball legends in Herman J.R. Reed Jr. and Cappy Pondexter, who in June were in Malaysia as part of the Sports Diplomacy Program from the U.S. Embassy. Picking up the conversation where we left off, we focus on their time abroad, as apart from tearing it in the US, the duo also had stints in Spain, France, Turkey, and Russia.
My first country was Istanbul, so it was different because they practice Islam. So waking up at 5 a.m. every morning was a little different for me in the beginning. But I adjusted so well, and it became one of my favorite countries. Russia had the time of my life. Mm. It changed my life financially, in so many ways, my family's life. So just being able to experience both cultures were really cool. I love to go back and visit my friends. Istanbul is one of my favorite cities in the whole entire universe.
Yeah.
It was great for me.
How about the game? Do you find any differences in the way they play?
I thought Europe was more physical, honestly, than it is in the States. Like, it was a battle.
Oh, that's surprising.
Okay. No, seriously, it was a battle. I remember, like, the first time, I'm like, okay, that's not a foul. In the States, they will call that a foul easily. So I had to adjust my game. And it made me a tougher player. I can definitely say that.
And for me, playing overseas, it was an adjustment period as well. When I first got to France, I used to like to make a quick spin move on the baseline. That was an automatic travel in France. I did a lot of reverse pivots and try to quick rip through and get, they call travel every time. So I literally, I used to just catch the ball and just start dribbling in the post and then go into a move. So I had to make those adjustments, but I've always wanted to go out and explore the world. One of our Olympic assistant coaches, I know you guys have heard it, but George Ravlin, you know, was played an instrumental part of my life. You know, he was at the head coach at Iowa when I was in high school, and I really admired him, thought about going to Iowa, but then got a chance to be with him on the Olympic team, and he was worldly and always told us to make sure we go out and explore the world, you know, go see how other people live, you know, walk in their shoes. And I tried to do that. So I got out and went around the world and played in any country that would have me pretty much. As long as they were paying the check, I would go there. But I enjoyed it, and I really did. And I like meeting other people and other cultures and letting them know a little bit about us. Because I know a lot of people in France had thoughts about Americans, and Americans had thoughts about Frenchmen. So we talked, and we said, you know what? You're not like we thought you were going to be. So, you know, it's good that's to great. Talk, and you go out, and that's what happens.
Also, it was a little different for WNBA players because we had to play in two seasons in one year. Yeah. So it was a lot of basketball being played, for sure.
JR, you know, just talking about post-career, both of you are retired. You said there are two possible avenues in the sport, broadcasting or coaching, like you said just now, right?
That was two that I did.
Yeah, that you did.
Yes.
If you still want to remain in the sport, right? Mm-hmm. You've done both. Like you said, you even have a Bachelor in Arts in Broadcast Journalism.
Yes, sir.
But you also said in a tweet, I think, that there are 1,000 ex-players out there who think they just because they played professional basketball, they can just go and get a job coaching or broadcasting. But
it is not.
That's not the case.
It's not the case. Yes, it's a lot of people that like to do that. You know, it's natural when you come out of the NBA, a lot of guys think, oh, well, I'm just going to go into coaching. Oh, I'm going to just go into broadcasting.
Seems like a natural progression, right?
But not for everyone. Yeah. It's work and dedication. Did you put the work in before? You just don't retire and say, oh, now I want to go do broadcasting. Did you go in intern earlier? Did you work with people, let them know you're going to be retiring soon and you want to get into broadcasting? That's what I did. And then it's like basketball. You have to get there and do your homework. You have to do your research on the games, the players, the coaches, know your stuff, because people will call you out if you don't know what you're talking about on Twitter. So I enjoyed it. And like you said, I did it in college. And my teammates from college, Kenny Smith, is on TNT with Charles Barkley. He got me with the ACC Digital Network. Rick Fox, another teammate of mine, is an actor and television star, does a lot of stuff. Brad Daugherty is on television. So a lot of Carolina players have moved on to do broadcasting. So for me, it was a natural progression, and that was something I've set myself up for since I was young.
And clearly you're having fun.
I love it. I love it.
What are the skill sets needed, you know, for the next player to go into what you're doing now?
Well, hopefully you'll be able to put two or three sentences together, but I don't know. Some of the guys on TV right now, I don't even think English is even a, you don't even have to know English to be, you got to be able to be knowledgeable. You know, people, they might like you, have a good personality, or you're a good face on television, but the bottom line is you have to be knowledgeable. You know, you have to be believable and likable on television, or you won't be there very long.
Cappy, do you have any immediate plans post-retirement yet?
Yeah, I have a lot of cool things. You know, fashion has always been a passion of mine. So, you know, I take great pride in doing campaigns, and hopefully, you know, I'll continue to grow with that. You know, movies, you know, whatever life throws at me that I'm passionate about, I'm absolutely going to grab it. You know, for me, I think you have to be passionate about things. Yeah. And if I'm not passionate, I'm not going to love it or like it. So I have to, you know, give 100% to whatever it is.
You said that, you know, athletes, you don't believe athletes should be one-dimensional. Like you said, you have an image consulting firm. It's called Four Seasons Managing.
Four Seasons Style Management.
With the big bucks that goes in today's game, you know, like you said, people in the NBA are earning millions. WNBA, hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon.
Do you think players, especially younger players, get enough financial advice with the money that they have?
No, not at all. And that's why, you know, I've taken to Instagram to really talk about financial literacy and being able to watch your own money instead of hiring and having people watch the money, because those people can do this. They can take the money from you. You know, I've seen it happen. You know, even with my business, I've lost a lot of money because I've allowed other people to watch. But now, you know, I think it's important to be able to watch your money and invest in the right way. And, Yeah, so.
Do you think there should be like, is there some form of education in the States for these young players?
Yeah, I think it is. I think the NBA and WNBA has to do a better job of making sure that it's a priority from the beginning, that they actually learn and not look at it as something boring, you know, because we get a lot of information as a rookie coming in that a lot of times it can go over our heads and we're not paying attention because we're so focused on the actual game and getting better that we're not paying attention to things that are going to actually matter later. Mm. And I've always been big on branding since the beginning, and that's why I advocated and pushed so much for the WNBA to really embrace that, because branding is wealth. You know, it brings a lot of revenue in. Mm.
Especially in this day of, you know, digital age.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You said before you retired, you had two teams that were kind of, you narrowed it down to two teams that you're supposed to join.
Yeah.
But then you talked to your agent and then you changed your mind. Talk us through that process. What are the considerations made?
Well, we were waiting on a league to push a deal to go through. It was Liz Cambage, obviously. And she was supposed to come to LA, mm-hmm. and that didn't happen. So once the trade didn't go through, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to retire. It's time. You know, I felt it. I was ready to put my shoes up and do other things. I didn't wake up the same. You know, I'm like, okay, why am I going to the gym? And I'm not being signed. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's a sign. It's time. Mm. You know, I talked to Kobe and he told me, you'll know when it's time to put the shoes on the rack. And I knew right away. And, you know, I don't have any regrets at all. I'm alive, I'm happy, and I'm very grateful for the things that I'm doing right now.
Mm. I want to talk a bit about the showbiz element in American basketball. Sometimes it's not just what happens on the court, but what happens around it. Like, for example, the recent NBA Finals, my Twitter timeline was filled with with Drake freaking out courtside. Not so much the game, but on Drake freaking out.
Yeah.
What do you think about, you know, these factors and the excitement it brings to the game? Is it detrimental to the game or does it benefit it?
Well, I think now that basketball has gotten so big and the revenue stream is coming from so many different areas and so many more people are interested in that. You know, I love Drake too, but I don't love him on the sideline jumping around like something's wrong with him. You know, he's sit down, enjoy the game and cheer for your Toronto Raptors. No, but I get that he's big. The NBA uses Drake. Drake uses the NBA. They talk about each other. You know, that's the culture of the basketball is a big hip hop. Mm-hmm. Part of the hip-hop, so it's all intermingled. And I'm just glad. When we came in, you know, the branding and stuff wasn't that big when I came in the late 80s, early 90s. And I'm glad to see that these young guys now have taken a bigger role in their financial planning. You know, for me, I did my financial planning. Coach John Thompson told us, just because you have an agent, you don't have to let your agent do your finances, you don't have to pay your bills, you don't have to do your taxes, you don't have to do your contract and handle your money. You know, you can split that up. And then after you get older, you may want to take on some of those responsibilities yourself. So after about my fourth year in the league, I was always big into investing, big in the stock market. And so I started doing my own investing after about my fifth year in the league. Mm. And, you know, saved that money that they're charging you those crazy commissions on. Because I knew the companies. I knew the mutual funds that I wanted. I had friends that were in the business we talked to all the time. And now I've seen it grow to where you've got guys now like Luol Deng, I just read, owns $125 million of property in Chicago, I believe. Mm. So guys are branching off. LeBron's doing television, cartoon series, movies. It's just guys doing so many different things that we would never thought about doing when we were in the league. And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I guess the game was way different. The scene was way different. How about yourself, Cappy?
Drake helped Toronto win a championship. He brought an energy that I've never seen in a game of basketball before. I've never seen a rapper or any entertainer of sort help a team like the way he did. Like, he brought
an auxiliary coach.
Yeah, it was so weird to see. It was funny too. But like JR said, that, you know, there's so many ways that the game has grown. You know, we talk about investment. You know, I'm big on IPOs, and players are investing in Airbnb. They're on Silicon Valley. They're going there. They're putting their money in the right places because they know that it's easy to blow money, you know, because
of course
you have entourages around. You take care of all these people and your family and friends. So it's easy to lose. And now I think guys are starting to smarten up, as well as women. Yes. And I think it's really good to see. And it's cool to see where the culture of basketball is going.
I've been speaking to Cappy Pondexter and J.R. Reed Jr. Thank you very, very much, guys, for coming into the show. Last couple of questions. Basketball in the U.S., big thing. this side of the world, though, not so much a big thing. What are your hopes for the distant future?
Not yet. I think the more players come over like me and JR,
definitely.
I think it's going to help inspire and impact the generation of young players.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about it, to be a part of it now. You know, I've given so much to the game, now I can give back now. So,
do you have any tips for, you know, people listening to this, inspired by both your stories and wants to get into the sport?
Nothing great has ever been achieved without hard work. So whatever it is you want to do, if you want to make basketball a hobby or something you may use to maybe get a scholarship or further yourself in life, you know, you've got to be dedicated to it. And I think, like, they have the Malaysian League here now. Mm. I think as that develops and they get more teams and more kids start being involved in basketball here in Malaysia, I think this is going to be a terrific situation here. And more international players are come here to play on those teams and might be a little better, and that'll help build the league up like that until you have your Malaysian players who can carry the league themselves, which eventually will happen. So you're a beautiful stage of your basketball life here. I mean, you've got great weather, passionate people, and, you know, and they want basketball. So I think it's going to be a bright future for basketball in Malaysia.
That was Herman J.R. Reed Jr. and Cappy Pondexter, two American basketball legends. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. If you'd like to revisit the interview again, you can head over to our website, www.bfm.my/Barnan, for the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, don't forget to tweet us. We're at BFM Radio. And please do download our latest app for free via Google Play and the App Store. My name's Daryl Ong. Thanks for listening to Bar None, the show that brings you through the ins and outs of the sporting world. Join us again next week, only here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.